Hello, everyone. Welcome to Danny's Diary, a podcast powered by Singing News Magazine. I'm your host, Danny Jones. My guest today is concert promoter extraordinaire Bill Bailey. We are glad to see Bill Bailey all the way from the Sunshine State of Florida. How you doing, Bill?
It is an honor to be here today, Danny.
Well, I am so proud that you are here and pronouncing your words fully. You and I don't normally talk like this, but Bill Bailey, if you know anything at all about Southern gospel music, there is a good chance that you've either heard about the Bill Bailey concerts or you have attended one of Bill Bailey's concerts. He promotes not only in his home state of Florida, but anywhere across the Southeast, there is a good chance you're going to see your favorite group as a result of the work of Bill Bailey. Bill, how many concerts do you promote each year?
Probably right now, less than what we have done. I'd say about 40 to 50 a year. At the height, single night events, pushing 100 there for a few years. Now, that doesn't include what we do at our church in Florida, but outside on the road, 40 to 50 dates a year.
And all of those concerts have one thing in common. They feature the leading names in Southern gospel music. If you like quartets, they are there. If you like family groups, they are on the program. If you like trios, they're there. If it's Southern gospel music, there's a good chance Bill Bailey is going to host it on one of his events. And, of course, you can't talk about Bill Bailey and his events without mentioning the Winter Gospel Music Convention that takes place during the month of February in Palmetto, Florida, or if you're in Bradenton, Florida. Some people want to claim it as Bradenton, Florida. But it's held at the Bradenton Area Convention Center. And this year's dates are, the 2020 dates are?
February 3rd through the 8th. It's six nights, and it's the largest event of its kind during the winter season, and just about every major group you could imagine. And then in addition to that, it's also, to my knowledge, and I may stand corrected, Danny, the largest Southern gospel music event in our industry that is owned and operated by a single proprietor or family.
Right, and we're pretty sure that's correct, because back when Singing News featured the Winter Convention on the cover, we did a little research, and everything that we could find would lead to that. The National Quartet Convention is owned by a board of directors, but your event, it's all on your wallet, bud.
Well, let me tell you, we have our board meeting after each year's convention, and Sally and I go to Cracker Barrel and talk about it.
Right. So there is your board meeting. And he is
over chicken and dumplings and biscuits and gravy.
Right. He's talking about his wife, Sally.
Well, Sally and I have been married for 29 years. God has given us a wonderful family, three children. They're all grown. Caleb and Chelsea are married with families of their own. And then Caitlin, she has been out of the house and back in the house. But we also are blessed to have two foster children that we've raised, 10-year-old twins. They've been in our care since they were 6 months old, and we'll probably see them off to college or some sort of graduate school thereafter.
How long have you been pastoring?
30 years. This year was my 30. It was my 30th year pastoring. And then Sally and I, we've been married for 29.
You've had, from a pastoral perspective, you've had some incredible things happen over the last 24 months. You've had some opportunities that don't come along that much. For example, you've spent a lot of time lately in the state of Louisiana. Share with folks what's going on there.
I've been very fortunate to develop a wonderful relationship with the Swaggart family, Jimmy and Francis, who we call brother and sister Swaggart. Their grandson, Gabriel, has been a very close friend. Gabriel's dad and the Swaggart son, Donnie. And a lot of people see them on their television network, Sunlight Broadcasting, so it's allowed me the opportunity not only to preach there, which literally is a pulpit to the world, but also to share with on their Bible study programs on the network and so on. It's been a really neat relationship. With that has come the opportunity. Brother Swaggart has sold like 18 million records, and he has a passion for this music. And so even though he may not be in the mainstream of what we would call Southern gospel music, I cannot tell you the numbers. I mean, extraordinary numbers of people that I see on the road at our concerts or church services that say, I watch SBN all the time. I love the gospel music. I see you on there. And then when I'm with Brother Swaggart, he's constantly asking me questions about this music, constantly throwing out names like the Florida Boys, the Happy Goodman family, and on, Bill Gaither. So it's really neat. He has quite a passion for this music.
And you have that same passion for this music. Obviously, most people know you as a Southern gospel music promoter. And Libby Stuffel was a guest on one of our previous podcasts, and she was talking about the first time they worked for you.
Yeah.
You showed up on your bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And when how did you, as a young teenager, what gospel music promoting bug bit you?
Well, I first fell in love with this music as a child watching the Gospel Singing Jubilee every Sunday morning, WALB, Channel 10 in Albany, Georgia. And from that, my family was an unchurched family. They did not go to church, but they loved this music. It's one of the things that drive me today, because I realize a lot of people that come to our concerts are not necessarily Christians, nor are they what we would call church-going people. Good people, yes. Moral people, yes, but haven't made that connection. So with that said, that was our family. So that bug hit me, the love for this music, early on in my life. And then later in life, as a teenager, my mom and I went to a concert in Plant City, Florida, that was promoted by J.G. Whitfield. And it had some groups I had been listening to at the time on the radio. The Hensons were one of my all-time favorites. Them and the Goodmans were my favorites. Then they had the Paynes, who were hot right back then from Ohio. And they had a group called the Singing Perrys that was just coming on the scene. And it was that night was the night that I would have to say I was 15, 16 years old. The promoter bug hit me. I love the music. Don't get me wrong. But Mr. Whitfield had a way of communicating. He would make those groups seem bigger than life. He knew how to bring them on stage, and you just felt like they were about to tear the roof off. He created an atmosphere. He also, the other thing he did was he sold product. He sold little lighted roses. He would sell cassette back in those days, cassette packages, different things. And so that mesmerized me. And then in Southern gospel music, our genre of music is quite different than other genres. In other genres like CCM or even in country music, you buy a tour. So the tour is already set up with a package of artists. You'd have your main artist and then maybe one or two openers. In Southern gospel, for the most part, we are afforded as concert promoters, we can put our program together a la carte. And so we have artistic control over the development of that program. So it's even from the youngest of days, it was neat just sitting in a room thinking of who I could put together on mm-hmm. a concert that would just be an incredible night. And in Southern gospel music, like I say, for the most part, even now we're still afforded that opportunity. And it bit me that night. And it's still just as real today, you know, 30 plus years later.
Well, you and I work, I'm at many of your concerts along the way, and I can say this with 100% confidence. I still see that little boy excitement in your eyes when you look out and you see a packed auditorium. And it's not just because you know that it's going to be successful financially that your hard work has been rewarded. You're looking at it as, okay, here are 1,000 people or whatever the number may be. They're gathered here for one reason, and that's to hear this music. They're going to get more than music. They may not realize it, but they're going to get a message that has the potential to forever change their lives. And I know part of your personal enjoyment is knowing that, okay, I helped make that happen. Maybe I helped plant a seed. Mm-hmm. And that's where your relationship crosses with your other relationship, meaning your pastor side versus your promoter side. That's where they merge. You know, it's hand in hand working with each other. And that just gives you a great deal of satisfaction.
There has to be an eternal purpose in what we do. If that's what separates gospel music from other genres of music, there has to be an eternal purpose. The other thing is I'm the biggest fan of this music. I love gospel music. I love the fact we're going to a singing.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact of when you pull up to the auditorium and you see those buses. You know, Mr. Whitfield was always known for adding groups to the program. That was back in the day when you'd sing all night and there'd be 7-8 groups on any given night. And, you know, we'd arrive at the concert and we'd count the buses and we'd try to figure out, oh, there's somebody here that we didn't know was going to be here. And I'm still that kid at heart that absolutely loves this music. And I don't think I could continue doing what I do if it wasn't for those two things, if there wasn't an eternal purpose, and then secondarily, if I didn't genuinely and sincerely love the music.
Well, it's a good thing you do sincerely love the music, because you just added another plate to your already crowded table, and you have joined the board of the Abraham Productions gang. And, of course, they are a leading concert promoting organization, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the Singing in the Sun, Gatlinburg Gathering, and some other notable events along through the years. And a little bit of a unique situation. This is the first time that Abraham Productions has brought on board another promoter. Now, Tony Green, the late Tony Green, was a part of that years before, but that's still a little different situation than you. What all transpired there, Bill?
Well, Ray reached out to me and asked if I would be interested, that they were going to have a board member position come up, and just wanted to know, would I be interested? And the more we talked about goals and values in future, the more that we realized that there was a lot of common ground there. And I have the utmost respect for Ray Flynn, besides being an incredible concert promoter of my generation. He is also an incredible man of God. And so between that and the other board members who we work with all the time on our other dates, it just seemed to work. I already do a tour group, a bus tour to the Singing in the Sun in Myrtle Beach, which is really the premier event of Abraham. So I'm already there and involved as well. So very honored, very humbled at the invitation to join. Here is a little bit of trivia in history that not many people know, and that is that the Singing in the Sun name actually came from one of our events that got handed down to us over the years. Back in the day when there were two main gospel music cruises, and one of which was the Singing at Sea, which was kind of the premier one at the time. Anyway, Singing at Sea was a summer cruise, and when that cruise would dock in, typically in South Florida, we would have a big gospel music event in the summer in Orlando area called the Singing in the Sun. And many of those artists, namely the Kingsmen and Gold City, would come to Orlando. Matter of fact, the Kingsmen actually recorded a live album called Singing in the Sun. When the cruise dates began to move and they combined cruises, and then it became a winter cruise, Tony Green, that was about the time they were starting the event in Myrtle Beach, and one day he called me and he said, Bill, Ray Flynn and I are going to begin this event in Myrtle Beach, and since you're no longer doing a Singing in the Sun in Orlando, we would like that name. I didn't legally own the name. There was no copyright attached to it, him and Ray were very honorable to call and get my blessing. And I was like, listen, y'all can have it. That would be fine. And now I think this is 21 years now for Singing in the Sun. They've had a great history and run with that name, but it came from Florida initially. So it's kind of ironic that now I'm part of the leadership of that organization.
Well, in all the things that you do in gospel music, whether it be a concert promoter or work with a lot of the different groups on management aspects, and being a general advisor to many groups along the way, you get a very unique perspective of the business side. So I'm going to throw this question out to you. In your opinion, what does gospel music need right now? What would be the ultimate shot in the arm for gospel music?
I think that our genre sometimes becomes too plastic. I think especially with the technology and the electronics of recording, sometimes that raw sense is lost. I think that would help us. An obvious answer to that is going to be young people. We do struggle in our industry by young people in the seats. However, it's been that way for many years. Our music taste generally is to an older audience. That doesn't concern me near as much. This is a podcast that's mainly listened to by music people. So if I could just be very blunt and frank, there will be more older people of yours and mine's generation within the next decade or two. So the fact that the people that say, well, this music is dying, really are just uninformed, because this music isn't dying. There is such a potential for growth because of the way the demographics are shifting. They're shifting in our favor, even if we don't do anything different. Now, with that said, there are some things that can be done different. I don't have all the answers. I do know one of the things I would like to see in our industry, somehow resolve is bringing in newer artists and newer groups quicker. I think that right now, the way it has been, and if I'm talking too much, you tell me, but the way it has been is that an artist comes on the scene with a group of people. They stay talented and true to this music, true to each other and true to God for 20 years plus, and then they become a marquee artist in our industry. That most people are not going to stay put anymore for 20 years. Those days of Brock Spear, Les Beasley, George and Glenn, all of those guys that are just going to do that for the rest of their life, that generation's gone. So I think we have to develop in country music, they've done it other genres, to where newer artists can come up and be raised up in our industry sooner and quicker. And I think that would benefit and help all of us. For example, the Fan Awards, by and large, over the course of the years, has been very similar nominees each year over the last, say, decade or two. That's in no ways attributing anything negative to the nominees. Even they would be the first ones to tell you they'd love to see some newer people in there. And I just think our industry would serve itself better to find ways to raise up groups up the ladder, so to speak, that would bring new life, bring youth, vitality. And I don't have the answers to that. You know, I can solve your problems a whole lot better than I can solve mine. But I do think that is something that would help our industry big time.
Mm-hmm. One final question. And we asked this question of many of the performing artists along the way, a memorable road story, a funny travel story, something like that. Is there a memorable concert story that Bill Bailey has? It doesn't necessarily have to be humorous, but is there one concert that you've done along the way that may stand out a little bit more than others for some reason?
Yes, August the excuse me, I said August, but it was actually October, but irrespective. Ashburn, Georgia, 1995, I believe it was. It was the first time I ever worked with the Happy Goodmans. They were icons and heroes of mine. And I had them booked for the first time the next night in Jacksonville, Florida, on a Saturday night. Well, I decided to do a concert on Friday night, the night before, in South Georgia, in Ashburn, Georgia, Turner County Civic Center. It's basically a glorified gymnasium, had a stage at one end. And I booked the Florida Boys, Spear Family, and Dixie Melody Boys for Friday night in South Georgia, and then we would go to Jacksonville with the Goodmans by themselves Saturday. I have the date already scheduled in South Georgia, and Rick Goodman calls and says, listen, we just had a cancellation, and would you like to have us on Friday night? I'm like, Rick, I've already got these other groups lined up. He said, we'll come on if you want us, and we worked out the details. And so on that night, I had Howard and Vestal Goodman, I had the Florida Boys, I had the Spear Family, and I had the Dixie Melody Boys. And you talk about an incredible evening of legends. We rewrote the occupancy code of that facility that night. It was incredible. And just the atmosphere of having the Goodman, Spears, Florida Boys, and Ed O'Neill all in one room, it's a night that I'll forever cherish. And I'll tell you one quick business story along those lines. My agreement with the Goodmans that night, and this is my first time working with them, my agreement was they were going to get a portion of the profit if we did really well. And that's not unusual in many genres. And we did really well. We packed the building. It was sold out, more people than we should have. And I remember going to the Goodmans, and I asked Ricky, I said, Ricky, do you want me to pay you tonight? I'm going to try to pay out some money. And Rick looked at me. He said, yes, but I talked to Mom and Dad, and they said, you only pay us the minimum. You keep all of the profit. You work so hard for tonight. You deserve all the profit. And I'll always remember that first night I ever had the Happy Goodmans.
Yeah. Our guest today on Danny's Diary has been Bill Bailey, a concert promoter that leads the way in providing quality concerts for Southern Gospel music artists and its fans. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you coming in today. Be looking for the next episode of Danny's Diary, the podcast powered by Singing News Magazine. You have a great week. We'll see you soon.